The Cry of the Righteous from Selected Psalms. This is an exposition of Psalm 10. This message by Pastor Rod Harris was delivered at Trinity Baptist Church on Wednesday evening, January the 30th, 2019.
You ever get angry or frustrated by the things you see going on around you? You ever get angry watching the news or hearing the latest that's going on in the culture? Ever find yourself frustrated by the success of the wicked? You ever find yourself wondering, how do those who use and abuse the name of God seem to prosper and never suffer any consequence? Does that ever anger you? Ever upset you? It does me. I get really frustrated with it. There are times I find myself thinking, Lord, where are you? Why aren't you doing something? Why aren't you curbing this? Why don't you do something to bring an end to this? Are you just not aware of what's going on? You ever felt like that? You can be honest about it. It's just us sitting around visiting tonight. Of course you have. All of us at some time or another have been frustrated because we just don't understand. And you're not alone feeling that. Israel certainly felt that for 400 years as they were enslaved in Egypt. They kept crying out to God, why don't you do something? Why don't you deliver us? Why do you leave us here? Habakkuk, the prophet, certainly wondered in his day. In fact, he said, Lord, why don't you do something? And God said to him, I am doing something. And if I told you what I was doing, you wouldn't like it. And he said, well, tell me. And so the Lord told him, and he said, I don't like it. He said, I'm raising up Babylon to be an instrument in my hand to come down on you. And I don't like that. You're frustrated when you're confused, when you're upset, when you don't understand. If you've ever been frustrated or discouraged or outraged by what you consider to be an injustice, then Psalm 10 is for you. The psalmist asked God, why are you content to sit on the sideline and not get in the game? Why don't you do something about the wicked? Tonight we're going to look at the entire psalm. It's just 18 verses. I'm going to be reading tonight out of the Christian Standard Version. I just like the way the translators have worked with this psalm. Psalm 10, beginning at verse 1. Lord, why do you stand so far away? Why do you hide in times of trouble? In arrogance, the wicked relentlessly pursue their victims. Let them be caught in their own schemes, the schemes they have devised. For the wicked one boasts about his own cravings. The one who is greedy curses and despises the Lord. In all his scheming, the wicked person arrogantly thinks there's no accountability since there is no God. His ways are always secure. Your lofty judgments have no effect on him. He scoffs at all his adversaries. He says to himself, I will never be moved from generation to generation without calamity. Cursing, deceit, and violence fill his mouth. Trouble and malice are under his tongue. He waits in ambush near settlements. He kills the innocent in secret places. His eyes are on the lookout for the helpless. He lurks in secret like a lion in a thicket. He lurks in order to seize a victim. He seizes a victim and drags him in his net. So he is oppressed and beaten down. Helpless people fall because of the wicked one's strength. He says to himself, God is forgotten. He hides his face and will never see. Rise up, O God. Lift up your hand. Do not forget the oppressed. Why does the wicked person despise God? He says to himself, you will not demand an account. But you yourself have seen trouble and grief, observing it in order to take the matter into your hands. The helpless one entrusts himself to you. You're a helper to the fatherless. Break the arm of the wicked, evil person until you look for his wickedness, but it cannot be found. The Lord is king forever and ever. The nations will perish from his land. Lord, you've heard the desire of the humble. You will strengthen their hearts. You will listen carefully, doing justice for the fatherless and the oppressed, so that mere humans from the earth may terrify them no more. So the psalmist is crying out. The psalms are refreshing. I find the psalms refreshing because they're real. They have the feel and the touch of humanity about them. They're not written in an ivory tower someplace, removed from real life. They're written in the trenches. They're written in the heat of battle by real people expressing real emotion about real circumstances. One of the things that's comforting about the Psalms is it reminds us it's okay to be angry. It's okay to be frustrated. It's okay to question and to wonder. It's okay because God's big enough to handle our tantrums, our hurts, and our short-sightedness. Sometimes we forget that. I read the Psalms and I see people of faith expressing what I have felt but was afraid to acknowledge. And I find that as they express their frustration, their hurt, their fear, their questions, in expressing it, they work through it. And in working through it, they come to the point where they praise and affirm God's power, God's grace, and God's glory. As we work through this particular psalm, we're going to find three sections. First, there's this unflattering portrayal of the wicked. Then we sense a perplexing problem, and then we find comforting reassurance. First of all, verse 2 down through verse 11, we have this unflattering portrayal of the wicked. But before we look at the description, look back at verse 1 and the way this psalm begins. Lord, why do you stand so far away? Why do you hide in times of trouble? Clearly the psalmist is hurt. He's frustrated. He's confused. He doesn't understand what's going on and why it's happening. Eugene Peterson, in his paraphrase of the Message, paraphrases it this way: God, are you avoiding me? Where are you when I need you? Again, have you ever felt that? You don't have to give me the spiritual look. You don't have to act like, no, it's never happened to me. I've never wondered where God was. I never wondered why He hadn't done it. We've all, in times of hurt, in times of pain, in times of trouble, have wondered, Lord, where are you? That's part of being human. That's part of being a fallen son and daughter of Adam. We struggle. We're discouraged. My question is, whenever you were discouraged, whenever you were frustrated, did you express it or did you deny it? Were you honest about it with the Lord, or did you suppress it and push it down? The psalmist is hurt and he's confused and he wants some answers. Now, what you need to understand is this isn't doubt. This isn't denial. The psalmist isn't angry. The psalmist is not cursing God. He's asking why. He's trying to understand what's going on. Why is this happening? It's not doubt. It's not denial, because this is a person, the psalmist, who believes that God really does exist. Not only does he believe God exists, he believes that God really is who he says he is. He really believes that God will do what he said he will do. Because he believes that God exists, because he believes God is holy, because he believes God is sovereign, because he believes God is faithful, these questions come up. It is his faith that causes the question. It's not doubt. It's not denial. This is faith speaking. Lord, this is what I know to be true. because you've said this. You have revealed this. You have told us this is the truth. But I'm looking at what's going on here and they don't line up and I don't understand. And I'd like an answer. That's what's happening in this psalm. Too often we think that to question is to doubt. Well, that's not necessarily true. Sometimes it is faith that demands we question. That we try to make sense of it. And here's the thing, God's big enough to handle that. He's big enough to handle our questions. He understands our hurt. And that's a very freeing thing when we come to understand it. Again, I'm not talking about whining or complaining. I'm talking about honest question. Because as you read through this psalm, what the psalmist is saying is, I don't understand what's going on, but I want to understand what's going on. Lord, give me some direction. Give me some understanding. You know the difference between an honest question and just denial. Every parent knows that. Because you've had a kid that's asked a question. When you answered the question, they weren't satisfied, no matter how you answered it. That's not an honest question. That's not a seeking of information. That's complaining. That's whining. It's not what's happening here. He wants to understand. He wants to see God for who He is. He wants to understand how He makes sense of the world around Him in light of what God has said. Lord, why are You so far off? Why do You stand so far away? Why are You hiding in times of trouble? But then He moves directly into this description of the wicked in verse 2 down through verse 11. And He tells us there are five characteristics of the wicked as He sees it. The first is, in verse 2 through 4, they're arrogant. In arrogance, the wicked relentlessly pursue their victims. Let them be caught in the schemes they've devised. For the wicked one boasts about his own cravings. The one who is greedy curses and despises the Lord. In all his scheming, the wicked person arrogantly thinks there's no accountability since there's no God. Arrogance of the wicked. So arrogant that they scheme and they boast about their own cravings, their own lusts, their own desires. These are people that are ruled by their desires. They're ruled by their appetites. Their God is their belly. Their God is their longing. And in their arrogance, they say, there's no accountability. Never going to be held accountable. I'm never going to have to pay for this. I'm never going to have to suffer because of this. And why? Because I know there is no God. Arrogant. The characteristic of the wicked. And you see it every day. You witness it every day in the news. You hear people and they're talking. I hear it constantly anymore to hear people who think themselves to be experts in what it means to be Christian, and it's just sheer absolute arrogance. They state what they believe and they act as if they'll never suffer any consequence for what they believe or what they think. That is, at its heart, a denial that God exists. I'm not going to be held accountable because there isn't any God to begin with. The wicked are arrogant. It also seems to the psalmist that the wicked prosper. Verse 5, his ways are always secure. Your lofty judgments have no effect on him at all. Now, this is the way it looks to the psalmist. He's not right in what he's concluded. It's what he feels. It's what it seems like. Why is it the wicked are always secure? They don't ever seem to have the trouble the righteous did. It's not true, but it certainly feels that way. At times it looks that way. These arrogant folk, they just continue to prosper. In their prosperity, they're secure. He says to himself, I'll never be moved. Nothing's ever going to change. It's going to be just fine. I'm never going to suffer any consequence. Verse 7, they're full of vile speech, cursing, deceit, Violence fill their mouth. Trouble and malice are under his tongue. It's interesting, Paul uses this description from Psalm 10 and verse 7 in Romans 3 to describe the wicked. We tend to think of wickedness in terms of action, in terms of what we do. And here it's being defined in terms of what we say. It's out of the heart these things are spoken. It's out of the heart that we speak. This reveals the wicked heart of the ungodly. Their mouth is filled with vile speech. Then in verses 8 through 11, they are violent people. Waits to ambush. Kill the innocent in secret places. Eyes are on the lookout constantly for the helpless. Lurks in secret like a lion in a thicket. Lurks in order to seize a victim. Seize a victim and drag him in his net. The picture is not a flattering picture. They're vile, wicked, horrible, corrupt, violent people. Always on the lookout for a victim. So those are dragged away and they're oppressed and they're beaten down. Helpless people fall because of the wicked one's strength. He says to himself, God is forgotten. He hides his face and he will never see. In his arrogance, the wicked says, I'm never going to suffer any consequence for my action. Because God either doesn't see it or he doesn't care. He doesn't see it or he just overlooks it. It's no big deal. You ever felt that way? You ever know somebody you work with or you're acquainted with, may even be a family member, that they are just as godless can be, and they never seem to suffer. They seem to just sail through life. Always plenty of money, always a good job, everything's always rosy in their world, it seems. Now you also know things are never what they seem. You don't know what goes on in the secret place. You don't know what goes on in their heart. Whether on a personal level or on a larger level, whether you're talking about individuals or you're looking at nations, we've all wondered, well, when are they going to get there? When are they ever going to suffer because of what they've done? When is it ever going to catch up with them? Well, that brings us to the second thing that I want you to note. And again, the second thing is not something I'm pulling out of the text. It's not exegeting this text. It's more the spirit that runs throughout this first section. It's the spirit that dominates verse 2 down through verse 11. The problem is, why does God tolerate the wicked? That's the thought that keeps running through this whole section. The question being asked, the question behind all the statements in this section is, why in the world does God tolerate the wicked? It seems like at times the boast of the wicked that God forget or that he hides his face and doesn't see, maybe that's true. You ever wonder that? God, why in the world do you tolerate this? You ever said that? I have. In my heart, I've said, Lord, why do you tolerate that? Because I sure wouldn't. And I say that as if I know better than the Eternal One. Somehow my understanding is greater than his. Lord, you're doing this all wrong. That happens to me particularly when something bad happens to somebody I love and care for. Something happens to one of my children. My typical response is to say, Lord, I don't understand why this happened to her. I'll give you a list of five people it ought to happen to. And if I were God, that's what I would do. Lord, why do you tolerate this? Lord, why do you allow this to go on? I have to ask, how arrogant is that? It seemed to him that the wicked prosper and the poor are devoured. The wicked prosper and the weak are crushed. The wicked prosper and the victim is destroyed. And the question behind all of this is, where is the justice in that? Lord, why don't you do something? One writer has suggested that the righteous pay on a cash basis and the wicked pay on credit with interest. But we don't tend to look at things that way. We're not often willing to take the long look. We're only looking at the immediate, and we want immediate justice. I want the wicked to know today that's wrong and God punishes that. But God doesn't work according to my time schedule. He doesn't work according to my agenda. Lord, why do you allow? And sometimes I forget. Mine's not the only game in town. There's far more going on in this world than what's happening in my little corner of it. And God is working all things according to His will and purpose. Sometimes that demands that I take the long look, that I back off of my circumstance and I see the hand of God working for His good according to His glory, according to His timing. That's the perplexing problem that's behind this first section. But I want you to note the change that starts in verse 12. Because that brings us to that third and final section, which is a comforting assurance. The psalmist turns the corner at verse 12. Rise up, Lord God. Lift up your hand. Do not forget the oppressed. Why is the wicked person despise God? He says to himself, you'll not demand an account, but you yourself have seen trouble and grief, observing it in order to take the matter into your hands. He calls on the Lord to take action. But in doing so, he acknowledges that God is sovereign. And acknowledging that God is sovereign, that he acknowledges as well that God will do as he pleases, but he'll do it in his own time. And in his own way. But I do want you to understand, it is a good and righteous thing to call for justice. It is a good and righteous thing. It is godly to desire that the wicked receive justice. It's a good thing to pray for. If you ever question how do you pray in this circumstance, it seems like the wicked are prospering. It seems like the wicked are winning this battle. It seems like wickedness and evil is overtaking our country. It seems as if those who have a wicked agenda seem to have the upper hand. How do I pray about that? You pray that the wicked would find the justice of God. That's a godly thing to pray. That is the good and right thing to pray. That God would bring justice. That He would be vindicated. That's always appropriate. And that's what the psalmist is praying for. Verses 14 and 15, the psalmist is certain that God will act. But he'll act in his own time. You're observing all of this. You see all of this. Nothing's gotten past you. And you're keeping an eye on it. And you're taking it all in because you're about to take matters into your own hands. The helpless one entrusts himself to you. And you are the helper to the Father. He's assured. He's affirming that God will act. And God will do what he said he would do. He's also confident of God's care and God's grace for the righteous in verse 16 down through verse 18. And of course, by righteous, I don't mean sinless. I mean those who are upright, those who are trusting in the Lord. The Lord is King forever and ever. The nations will perish from His land. Lord, You have heard the desire of the humble. You will strengthen their hearts. You will listen carefully, doing justice for the fatherless and the oppressed, so that mere humans from the earth may terrify them no more. Having acknowledged his pain, having expressed his hurt and his confusion, the psalmist then comes to the end and he expresses his confidence both in the grace and the justice of God. So, as we come to the conclusion, here's what we learn from this psalm. Here's the valuable truth that we come away with. When confronted with difficult or conflicting appearances, the believer must see reality through the eyes of faith. When I look at the world and it doesn't make sense, when I look at the world and I look at what's happening in the culture around me right now, right here, and it doesn't line up with what God says, and I see wicked people prospering and I see righteous people suffering, and I say, that's backwards. That's not how it's supposed to be. I have to look at that circumstance through the eyes of faith, the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things I can't see. And I have to say, ultimately, God's will is going to be accomplished. God's purpose is going to be fulfilled. And somehow, and I don't know how, but somehow this current circumstance fits in to God's purpose and God's plan. And I don't understand it. And to be honest, I don't like it. But I'm trusting and I'm believing what God says rather than what I think or how I interpret what's happening right in front of me. That's what it means to live by faith. As the people of God, we're called to live by faith, not by sight. So I can't ultimately judge and determine what's really happening in our culture by what I see, or even by what the talking head tells me on my television. I have to go by what God has said. I have to trust His Word. And I have to live by faith, ordering my life, ordering my mind to walk in obedience to what He says. His Word is truth. His Word is faithful. And so I live by faith and not by sight.
You've been listening to the TBC Tulsa podcast, which features the preaching ministry of Pastor Rod Harris at Trinity Baptist Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma, located at the corner of 41st and Union. To learn more about the ministries at Trinity Baptist Church, visit us on the web at www.tbctulsa.org.